CAN Policy Update Webinar. My name is David Olive, and I am Vice President of Policy Development Support at ICANN. We are pleased to provide our regular policy update, which we do prior to each ICANN meeting, in order to provide interested parties with an update on policy development activities. We think it helps all of us to prepare and focus our efforts in Prague. There is a lot of information contained in this presentation. The slides and recordings will be made available following this session, so everyone will have an opportunity to review it and refer back to it if needed. A few housekeeping items. Please note the policy notes in the center lower box. To reduce interference, please mute your phones. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the session when the phones are unmuted. In between that, of course, if you have any questions, please use the chat box, and we will do our best to answer your questions in real time, and so that would be another way to do that before the end of the session. The goals of our session today, and we thank you for joining us, will be to provide an update on the current policy work, review the issues that will be discussed at the ICANN meeting in Prague, provide additional information and opportunities for input on those policy issues, have a special introduction to the at-large policy issues. Our at-large director, Heidi Ulrich, will be doing that for us today. And, of course, answer any questions that you may have on the topics and the program that you see presented today and in Prague. In addition to the number of policy-related activities that we'll highlight today, there are other important sessions taking place in Prague, such as the update on the RAA negotiations, a session on ethics and conflicts of interest, ICANN and the Internet governance landscape, a new GTLD program update, the forum on DNS abuse, and, of course, the newcomers track, and finally, the anniversary of ALAC, which Heidi will tell us a little more about. Of course, events and further information and details can be reviewed on the Prague meeting schedule. Information is here. The focus of the presentation is on policy development at ICANN, and as most of you will be aware, the following bodies are responsible for such policy development. The generic name supporting organization, GNSO, develops policy recommendations applicable to the generic top-level domains. The country code supporting organization, CCNSO, has the ability to develop policy recommendations applicable to the country code top levels. And the address supporting organization, or ASO, reviews and develops recommendations on Internet Protocol address policy. In addition to these supporting organizations, they have a number of advisory committees listed here that also provide advice to the ICANN board. In the interest of time, so we can get to the substance of my colleagues and an interaction going forward, the topics covered here for the GNSO are listed. Also for the CCNSO, at large, and the ASO, and more details will be provided in a moment. I now turn the floor over to Liz Gaster, Senior Policy Counselor for the GNSO, to talk about GNSO policy issues. Liz, please.
Thank you very much, David, and good day, everyone. My name is Liz Gaster, and we have quite a long list of issues currently being discussed in the GNSO, so we've selected just a few highlights of them to review with you today. We do have about 25 projects and various working groups underway, so it's not feasible to cover all of them today. But just to give you some of the highlights, we'll be talking about the inter-registrar transfer policy, the locking of domain names subject to UDRP proceedings, fake renewal notices update, an update on the activities related to the registrar accreditation agreement. I'll be talking a little bit about who is, along with my colleague Steve Shang, and then we'll be touching also on consumer choice, competition, and trust metrics, and cross-community working groups and some draft principles we've been working on. So these will be some selected highlights that we do plan to cover with you today. And first, I'll turn it over to Marika Konings to talk about the inter-registrar transfer policy. Thanks, Marika.
Thanks, Liz. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. So first I'll be talking to you about the inter-registrar transfer policy, also known as the IRTP. This is a GNSO consensus policy that was adopted back in 2004 with the objective to provide registrants with a transparent and predictable way to transfer domain name registrations between registrars. As part of the implementation of the policy, it was decided that it might be helpful to carry out a review to see whether the policy was working as intended or whether there were any areas that would benefit from further clarification or improvements. It might be worth pointing out that this is actually the number one area of consumer complaints when it comes to issues that are raised with our ICANN compliance staff. And as a result of the review that was carried out, a number of issues were identified that were then grouped together in five different policy development processes, or also known as PDPs, that were titled A to E and which are being addressed in a consecutive manner. So the Part B, the IRTP Part B PDP in the series is now nearly complete. All of the recommendations have now been adopted by the ICANN board, and several of these actually came into effect 2 weeks ago on the 1st of June, including a requirement for registrars to provide a Transfer Emergency Action Contact, or TEAC, which allows registrars to contact each other in the case of an emergency, such as hijacking. It also includes a requirement that the losing registrar notify the registrant of the transfer out, which before was an optional issue. And it provides clarification that an objection to a transfer must be provided with the express and informed consent of the authorized transfer contact on an opt-in basis. And upon the request of the registrar must remove the lock within 5 calendar days. So two of the recommendations that were adopted more recently, which relate to how to lock and unlock domain names, and another one relating to the clarification and standardization of who is status messages relating to registrar lock. ICANN staff is currently working on the implementation, and you can expect to hear more about those in the near future. So in the meantime, the IRTP Part C working group is making good progress. This working group is looking at three different charter questions. The first one relating to the issue of whether there should be a change of control or a change of registrant function for GTLD registrations, as this currently does not exist. Second question relates to whether the form of authorization, which is used to initiate a transfer, should be time-limited. And the third issue this working group is looking at is whether there should be a requirement for registries to use IANA IDs for registrars instead of proprietary IDs. So in order to gather information on these questions, the working group started off by conducting a data gathering survey. They also held a public comment forum, and they requested input from GNSO stakeholder groups, constituencies, as well as other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. So as a result of that information gathered and weekly conference calls, the working group has now published its initial report for public comment. The initial report includes four preliminary recommendations. The first one recommends the creation of a change of registrant's consensus policy, which would outline the rules and requirements for conducting a change of registrant. One of those requirements of that proposed policy would be for the registrar to notify the prior and new registrant that such changes have been requested and require confirmation from both parties that such a change is desired. But at the same time, there are a couple of outstanding issues that the working group is specifically looking for input on, such as should this policy be accompanied by a restriction that would prevent a change of registrar immediately following a change of registrant for a certain period of time, whether this change of registrant policy should be incorporated as a standalone policy or should it become part of the existing IRTP, and which changes to registrant information should qualify as a change of registrant in the who has information. So these are some of the specific questions that the working group is looking for input on as part of the public comment forum. The second recommendation relates to time-limiting forms of authorization, or also known as FOAs. The current working group's thinking is to put this time limit somewhere between 45 and 60 days, but this is also an issue that the working group is looking for further input on to make a final determination on what would be the appropriate time limit. A third recommendation that is linked to the previous one relates to providing an opt-out mechanism to the requirement of time-limiting FOAs should a registrant decide so, which, for example, might be desirable in cases where a domain name registration has been put up for auction, which could span a longer time period than the 45 or 60 days that are currently under discussion. So recommendation four would require all gTLD operators to publish the Registrar of Records IANA ID in the SIC TLDs noting that this should not prevent the registry to use proprietary IDs in the context of other operations as long as the IANA ID is published as well. So if you're interested to hear more about the initial report and the recommendations, you're more than welcome to attend the workshop that the working group is organizing in Prague on Wednesday from 9 to 11. And you're also strongly encouraged to submit your comments to the public comment forum, which will be open until the 4th of July and then followed by a reply cycle, which is planned to close on the 25th of July. And on this site, you'll find some more information or links to the initial report as well as the public comment forum and the current inter-registrar transfer policy itself. So the next topic I'll be talking about is a PDP, a policy development process relating to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings or the UDRP domain lock working group, as it's now being referred to as well. So this PDP follows from a recommendation of the IR2P Part B working group to address this issue as part of a possible review of the UDRP. And subsequently, the issue report on the current state of the UDRP, this issue was also flagged as a problem. So based on those two efforts, the council decided to initiate a PDP on this specific item currently there is, as according to the UDRP, no actual requirement to lock a domain name in the period between the filing of the UDRP complaint and the commencement of proceedings. The UDRP does refer to status quo, but it actually doesn't define what it means in relation to the locking of a domain name. So as part of its charter, the working group has been asked to consider a number of questions, such as whether there should be an outline of the process for the locking of a domain name, which should be followed by the registrar, whether there should be a definition of what locks actually means, meaning what kind of changes can and cannot be made once a domain name is locked subject to UDRP proceedings, and also whether there should be any additional safeguards to protect registrants during the process. So following the adoption of the charter by the GNSO Council group, a working group was formed, and this working group started its deliberations in April of this year. And as per its charter, one of the first tasks that the working group has been working on is to actually obtain further input in order to have a clear understanding of the exact nature and scope of issues encountered with the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. And so to this end, the working group has now developed two surveys, one intended for registrars and another one intended for UDRP providers, in which a range of questions are asked in order to get further insight into the current practices in relation to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, but also the issues that are countered by these two parties. So following the completion of the survey, the working group is planning to also open a public comment forum to get broader input on these issues, as well as the working group will reach out to the different GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as other supporting organizations and advisory committees to get their views on these issues. So if you're interested to hear more about this topic, the working group is organizing an open working group meeting in Prague. This will take place on Thursday, the 28th of June, from 9 to 10:30. And if you're interested to submit your views on this, I would recommend you keep an eye on the ICANN homepage, where you can find the link to the open public comment forum, so you can submit your submissions there once the public comment forum opens. And, of course, if you're a registrar or UDRP provider, please participate in the survey that has been sent out earlier this week. And here, for, if you want to know a bit more about the background and what the working group is working on, here's also a link to their workspace where you can find all the relevant information. So the last topic I'll be talking about is fake renewal notices. Fake renewal notices are misleading notices that are sent to registrants from someone claiming to be or to represent the current registrars with the intention of getting the domain name transferred to this entity. This was an issue that was discussed as part of the deliberations of the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, which recommended that the GNSO Council should consider initiating a policy development process on this topic. But following some further discussions that the GNSO Council had on this issue, they decided that it might be helpful to first obtain further information on this type of abuse and the scope to help inform its deliberations on whether or not a PDP would be the right approach to take. And so as a result of that, the council requested a drafting team to develop a request for information to the registrar stakeholder group and based on the feedback received, report back accordingly to the council. The drafting team got together and they also developed a survey outlining a number of questions relating to fake renewal notices, really determine what the scope of the problem and the size of the issues encountered were. And based on the feedback received, and you can see here, for example, that on the issue, responses were split between registrars, whether some of them really viewed this as a serious problem that needed to be addressed, while others provided the feedback that it wasn't a big deal for them at all. So based on the feedback received, the drafting team produced a report to the council, which provides, in addition to an overview of the results of the survey, also a number of options the GNSO Council may want to consider to address this issue. So these options include adding a section to the REA that would address business practices that are not allowed by registrars. It suggested the council could also consider adding it to one of the ongoing or future IRTP PDPs as the objective of a fake renewal notice is most of the time the transfer of a domain name to another registrar. Another suggestion was to add it to the upcoming PDP on the REA, which intends to address issues that were not resolved as part of the REA negotiations. The report also suggests to ask the assistance from the ALAC to develop educational materials and promote awareness around these issues with registrants. Another suggestion is to raise the issue with the FTC, who has acted on this issue in previous instances. Initiate a PDP on a specific issue or, as a last option, do not proceed with any action at this point in time. So following the submission of the report and the presentation to the GNSO Council, they actually decided to put it out for public comment first in order to obtain community input on the findings of the report as well as the recommendations for next steps. So as a result of that public comment forum, 6 contributions were received from various parts of the ICANN community. And the GNSO Council has now asked the drafting team to review those comments and to decide whether any changes should be made to the report based on those comments and report back to the GNSO Council accordingly. And following that, the GNSO Council is expected to consider how to proceed and what steps, if any, to take next. And so this drafting team is expected to meet shortly to start its review on the comments received, so it's likely that you'll see further news on this in the near future. So here again, you find some links to further information on these issues. There's a link to the report as well as a public forum where you can find the comments received and as well a report of the public comments. And so with that, if you have any comments about any questions or comments about these topics, please feel free to post them in the chat, and I'll do my best to respond to them accordingly. And with that, I'll hand it over to my colleague, Margie Milam.
Thank you, Marika. And hello, everyone. I'm going to provide you with an update on the REA negotiations. This is the Registrar Accreditation Agreement that is a standard agreement that all registrars sign with ICANN to allow them to register domain names on behalf of registrants. As many of you know, this has been a very active project over the last several months, commencing primarily in Dakar when the ICANN board adopted a resolution asking for bilateral negotiations to begin. And so since Dakar, there's been an active series of negotiations that have tried to really address the issues and the amendment topics that were recommended by the GNSO Council and ALAC drafting team on the RAA, as well as to address some law enforcement recommendations that were submitted by law enforcement representatives to deal with their ability to address cybercrime related to the DNS. And since the CAR, there's been a number of updates that have been provided to the community through the community wiki that has been posted, and I will provide you with a link later on in this presentation. And since the Costa Rica meeting, there's been updated recommendations received from the law enforcement community that may be of interest to you all, specifically with respect to HUWA's validation issues and data retention issues. And so if you look at the wiki, you'll actually see the submissions from the law enforcement representative that clarified their previous requests with respect to these topics. The other aspect of the board resolution in the CAR was that it asked for a GNSO issue report to address the remaining issues. In other words, the board anticipated that not all of the topics that were suggested as amendment topics may end up being incorporated into the negotiated RAA, and as a result, the board wanted to kick off a policy process to have those additional items addressed through the GNSO Council's policy development processes. And at this time, the final issue report has been published, and the GNSO Council is currently awaiting the negotiations to conclude in order to identify which of those amendment topics should be explored through the policy processes. So with respect to the current status of the negotiations, there's been a series of documents posted on the ICANN website that really reflect the current state of the negotiations. And as you look through these documents, you will see that there's actually an entire RAA red line that has been posted. And I just want to point out that this red line is really reflects ICANN's most recent ask, but it is not a fully negotiated or approved document. So in other words, when you read this RAA draft, it has not been approved by the Registrar Stakeholder Group, for example, although there are many topics in there that have been explored with them and that appear to have their approval, but the overall document itself is still subject to further negotiations. When you look at the document, you'll see that there's a lot of significant areas that have been addressed in this draft, specifically related to verification and validation of who is information and registrant data. And that is something that is new and is likely to get a lot of community interest and discussion in the PROG meeting next week, starting the next 2 weeks. There's also enhanced data collection requirements that came from the law enforcement community on registrants. This is not information that would be published in the WHOIS, but it's more that information such as, for example, financial information could be subpoenaed by law enforcement if they need to for law enforcement purposes. There's also enhanced reseller obligations because the reseller issue has been one that's raised a lot of concerns over the years, and so there's clarification on how resellers are treated. There's also this new concept of creating a privacy and proxy accreditation program. And as you may know from the various reports that came out of the WHOIS review team, there's a lot of issues related specifically to proxy and privacy services. And there's a suggestion that I can create a privacy proxy accreditation program to try to create rules around the provision of those services. There is also a viewpoint of contact, and that's been something that's been talked about in ESSAC reports, and it's something that would be instrumental for both law enforcement and for the general public to be able to submit requests related to illegal activity involving domain name abuse. And so that is something you'll see as you review the documents. There's also a request for additional information related to registrars, such as their location, the officers and directors, information related to affiliates. All of that is incorporated into an appendix that is posted for your information. And finally, there's enhanced language related to prohibition of cyber squatting, and that's something that came from the RAA drafting team's recommendations. And so as you come and think about the sessions that you'd like to participate in Prague, I invite you to come to the session on the RNA negotiations, because this session, which is scheduled for the 25th of June, is really meant to solicit information from the communities that would inform the conclusion of the negotiations. And there's many key issues that will be addressed in that session, specifically ones related to who is verification and when would be the appropriate time for having that. The suggestion from the law enforcement community was that the verification of who is would happen before the registration is complete, and from the registrar perspective, they would prefer to see that after the registration is complete so that it doesn't interfere with the registration processes. There's also a recommendation or a requirement built into the draft that there would be phone verification requiring the return of a unique code, and that is something that will be soliciting information in this session. There's also questions about how often this verification should be updated and whether there would be an annual re-verification of who is information. And that, you know, obviously would impact a lot of registrants, and so that is something that we would like to receive input in the session. And finally, an important issue to the registrar community is the universal adoption of this new RAA. In other words, once the new form is negotiated and gone through the process, the registrars are concerned that all registrars would need to be on the agreement at the same time, or there would be a creation of a competitive disadvantage for those that have these enhanced obligations versus those who are on the old agreement. And so that is something that we'd like to explore in the session in Prague. And so to wrap it up with respect to the GNSO activity, as I mentioned before, there is this issue report that was published related to the RAA negotiation topics. And as I indicated, the GNSO Council would be in a position to initiate the policy development process once there's been the conclusion of the RAA negotiations and a report of the amendment topics that weren't actually incorporated into the new form of agreement. And we'd also be looking to a board instruction to try to get an identification of the topics they would like to see covered in this PDP. And so finally on this slide, I provided you with the information where you can get these reports and information related to the RAA negotiations, as well as the Prague session information. And so with that, I will hand it over to Liz, who will provide you with an update on the WHOIS studies.
Thank you very much, Margie. It's Liz Gaster again. And just very briefly, a reminder that we do have four studies underway looking at who is at the request of the GNSO Council, one that looks at misuse of public who is data, one that seeks to identify how or to examine how registrants identify themselves, one looking at proxy and privacy abusive registrations, and then a final survey looking at the potential feasibility of conducting a proxy and privacy relay and reveal study. There's also a upcoming survey that I'll talk briefly about related to a WHOIS service requirements report that was published in 2010, and I'll mention some other WHOIS activities as well. So, again, as many of you know, the GNSO Council decided in 2007 that WHOIS studies would be useful in order to provide a factual basis for future policymaking, and after conducting a rather lengthy process of soliciting ideas about what studies to do and obtaining the costs of doing such studies and assessing their feasibility, selected these four areas that are being pursued now. The WHOIS misuse study that I mentioned already that is underway, and we can expect initial results approximately mid-2013. There's also this registrant identification study being conducted by NORC at the University of Chicago that is a data-gathering study that will identify and classify various types of entities that register domains. This study was launched late last year, and we are anticipating initial results late in 2012. Next is the proxy and privacy abuse study that is looking at a broad sample of proxy and privacy registered domains that are associated with alleged harmful acts to do some analysis to understand how those are used. This study was just announced recently. It's being conducted by the National Physical Lab of the UK. They have begun their work, and we're expecting some initial results in mid-2013. And then lastly, there was a proposal to conduct a Who is Privacy and Proxy study of relay and reveal requests. When we pursued this study, potential bidders were unsure of whether the study would be feasible, especially related to obtaining a sufficient data sample and addressing some confidentiality issues. So the council opted instead to conduct a survey to explore whether it was feasible and what factors might promote or impede timely resolution of relay and reveal requests. So this study was survey was launched in September, and actually initial results have been posted as of the 4th of June on the ICANN website, and comments are being welcomed on this draft relay and reveal survey, again assessing the feasibility of proceeding with a full study. So I encourage you, if you're interested in that, to look at the study that's posted, and encourage you to provide your comments on this draft report. There will not be sessions on Who Is in Prague. This is really taking advantage of this webinar to give you an update on what is going on with these rather lengthy longitudinal studies. So that concludes my summary of what's going on with those studies. But I did also want to make reference to a upcoming survey that is being prepared by a working group of the GNSO that's taking a look at Who Is service requirements, and specifically a report that was published back in July of 2010, where the GNSO Council asked the policy staff to inventory technical requirements for Who Is that would reflect not only known deficiencies in the current service, but also take a look at technical requirements that may have been needed to support various policy initiatives that have been suggested or proposed in the past. So the council decided to convene a working group to try to estimate the level of agreement with each of these various proposed requirements that were included in this report of 2010. These are some examples of what the survey would include. They're there for your reference. And I think the idea, as I mentioned, is to estimate the level of agreement with these kinds of elements. And it's not intended to suggest policy, new policy for Who Is. It's really intended to just make sure that when new protocols and new technical capabilities for Who Is are being considered, that all of the right ingredients are being included in that assessment. So a draft survey was posted just recently on the 30th of May for public comment, and webinars were held on the 1st of June to explain what was intended by this survey and to solicit input from experts who are not only knowledgeable about technical aspects of Who Is, but also about survey design to help assess the quality of the survey to see if the survey is really asking the right questions, given that it's directed at a somewhat technical audience. So the next steps will be for once that comment period ends for the just assessment of the draft survey, the survey will actually be finalized for GNSO Council review and then conducted, and then the working group will analyze the results and publish a final report. So, again, that's not for discussion, particularly in Prague, but we very much wanted to make you aware of the fact that we are looking for input on the draft survey, and you'll see here more information. First about the Who Is studies, which also includes a link, if you click on that first link, to the draft relay and reveal report that I mentioned, and then also information about the public comments that we're seeking on the technical service inventory survey that's going to be conducted shortly. So that concludes what I wanted to discuss about Who Is. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague Steve Sheng to talk more about Who Is and the IRD working group. Steve?
Thank you, Liz. Good day, everyone. The IRD stands for Internationalized Registration Data. It's a joint working group chartered by GNSO and ESSAC to study the feasibility and suitability of introducing submissions and display specifications for internationalized registration data. This is an important topic because supporting internationalized registration data is seen as an important evolutionary step for the WHOIS service. Traditionally, the registration data are in Latin or U.S. ASCII. With the introduction of IDNs, there's more and more a demand for registrants to submit this information in their local languages and scripts. However, today there's no standard exist for submission and display of this information, and the current WHOIS implementations do not consistently support IRD. So those are the key issues that drives this work. The current status of this work is the working group, after 2 years of deliberation, have published its final report, and the ESSAC has revised and approved the report in April this year. The GNSO Council is currently considering this report, likely to take action in the next council meeting in Prague or shortly afterwards. Briefly, the IRD working group considered four issues. The first issue is it suitable to internationalize domain registration data? That means to have these data in local languages and scripts. And the answer to that is yes. And second, they work on to see what data elements are suitable to be internationalized. And they've done a systematic analysis of the data elements and going through them one by one to see which are suitable to be internationalized. The third issue they look at is the current WHOIS system capable of handling the query and display of internationalized registration data? And the answer to that is not. There are local conventions exist that does not scale and could have interoperability problems. And finally, they look at specifications that are feasible to deal with internationalized registration data. With these issues, they made four recommendations. The first recommendation is they recommend ICANN staff to develop, in consultation with the community, a data model that could accommodate internationalized registration data. The second recommendation is the GNSO Council and ESSAC request a common issues report on translation and transliteration of contact information. This issue is extensively discussed in the working group. You know, having the localized information, and then the question is whether there's a need to translate and transliterate those information to English or to a Latin script. And if so, who should bear the burden to do that? The working group would recommend a PDP to address this issue. The third recommendation is speaking to the protocol deficiency and asking the ICANN staff work with the community to identify a data access protocol that meets the needs of internationalization. And finally, the working group asked ICANN to take appropriate steps to require GTLD registries and registrars, and to a certain extent, CCTLD registries to support the standards that are agreed in the IRD report. The next steps is once the GNSO and the ESSEC approve the final version of the report will be sent back, send it to the board for action. The GNSO Council may also wish to provide advice with regard to some of those recommendations that have policy implications. So that's a quick update on the IRD working group. Next, I'm going to pass on to my colleague, Barry Kopp, to give you an update on consumer metrics. Barry?
Great. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. And welcome, everybody. We appreciate the attendance. I'm going to give you a quick overview of the consumer metrics working group and basically how this got started. Late in 2010, the ICANN board had requested from the SOs and ACs about seeking advice on the definition and proposed measures on consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition. These three key terms are defined in the affirmation of commitments, and why this is important work currently is that 1 year following the first delegation of the new GTLDs, a future review team will be formed where they will finalize the proposed metrics that will help gauge the success of the new GTLD program. Some of our recent developments, back in 2011, the GNSO Council formed a working group to help try to define these terms and metrics. And through all of our deliberations, we finally formed a final, or I'm sorry, a draft advice letter mid-February, in which we opened up a public comment forum that lasted or closed around mid-May. And presently, the working group is reviewing all the public comments to shape the final advice letter that will be later submitted to the GNSO Council. We're getting a little bit closer. We're actually about 75% complete of the comments, and they are positive changes to the advice letter. So what are the contents of the advice letter? Basically, it's structured into three forms. First, we'll define consumer trust, choice, and competition, as well as the proposed metrics for each one of those definitions. I won't review through the definitions here in detail today, but there are a few takeaways from this slide. The first is there is a particular order or reasoning for the order of these definitions. And first and foremost, consumer trust and consumer choice do typically overlap each other. However, we're maintaining the distinction. But there's a key term here as to what a consumer is, and thus the working group had to define that what a consumer is, and then thus apply that to those definitions. The third one, or really the fourth one, which is competition, the takeaway here is just that the realm of the metrics around competition are only those for industry participants, such as registry operators, registrars, et cetera. And lastly, given the review of the public comments, there will be modifications to these definitions as the working group produces its final report. Here, this slide is just a quick high-level overview of the types of metrics per definition. There are far too many to review here today, and I do invite the community that if you'd like details around the specific metrics, there's a link out to the public forum that contains the latest draft, and you can get into the exact details of each of these metrics, as well as some possible challenges in implementing them, and also including possible three-year targets. Just like with the definitions earlier, some of these metrics are the definitions of these metrics are subject to change based on review of the public comments, as well as a few additional ones are being included as well. So what are our next steps? Basically, as I mentioned, the working group is trying to produce the final advice letter, as to which that will be submitted to the GNSO Council for their consideration, which is stated here in June. It'll probably look to be the beginning of July before the working group can formally submit the advice letter to the GNSO Council. In terms of what this means for Prague, we do not have a public session scheduled this time. However, representatives from the working group will be briefing the GNSO Council, basically just a quick status update. If you're interested in more information, you can go out to the public comment forum that I mentioned that has the latest work products, as well as you can go to the Consumer Metrics Wiki page that will show a lot of the current documents that are work in progress. And there's plenty of great information there. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Julie, and she'll brief you on the cross-community working groups. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barry, and hello, everyone. Glad to be here to give you this brief update. The cross-community working groups are important because they address issues of common interest to the various supporting organizations and advisory committees, but there have been some concerns that they don't necessarily always operate and coordinate in their participation with the SOs and ACs. Because of that, the Council sought to develop some principles for cross-community working groups to bring some predictability and clarity to their processes. Just a note on some of the recent cross-community working groups. We've had the SOAC New GTLD Applicant Support Working Group, the Geographic Regions Review Working Group, Internationalized Registration Data Working Group that Steve Sheng, my colleague, mentioned just previously, and the DNS Security and Stability Analysis Working Group that Bart Boswinkel will mention a little later in this presentation. And some of the recent developments are that the GNSO Council approved a drafting team to develop some draft principles. The team provided those draft principles to the Council in January of this year, and in March the Council approved those principles and then distributed them to the other supporting organizations and advisory committees for consideration. These draft principles, just at a very high level, address the scope of cross-community working groups, their purposes in relationship to the policy development processes, and their operations, the formation, execution, and outcomes. The next steps are that the principles may be incorporated in the GNSO's guidelines for establishing working groups and the formation of new cross-community working groups. ICANN is also holding a public session on the principles in Prague on Monday, the 15th of June, in the Roma Room. And the goal of this session is to raise awareness of the principles, answer questions, and discuss any issues or concerns. And of note, a development just in the last day or so is that the CCNSO has reviewed the principles and has responded to the GNSO Council Chair that they are suggesting a development of a cross-community working group to further hone the principles, that there are some areas that they think may be missing and may need to be included in a revised set of principles. And for further information, here is the link so that you can review the principles. And at this point, then, I would like to move along to my colleague, Brian Peck, who will talk to you about protection of Red Cross and IOC names. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie, and welcome, everyone, to our policy update webinar. We appreciate your participation. I'm going to provide a brief update on the status of the discussion involving the possible protection of Red Cross and International Olympic Committee names. Basically, what has happened since the Costa Rica meeting is the GNSO Council had established a drafting team to follow up on the board request for policy advice on providing top-level protection for the IOC and Red Cross names after the initial first round. The drafting team did come up with some recommendations to extend permanent protection to these two organizations' names at the top level in future rounds, and also to, at the time, at the vote that took place, to provide these protections in the initial round, which since, of course, has expired. The GNSO Council adopted those recommendations and forwarded them to the board. The board's new GTLD committee on April 10th declined to adopt the recommendations at the time, although recognizing the substance of the negotiation or the recommendations, had concerns with regards to timing given the late stage of the application process at that time, and so declined to adopt those particular recommendations. In addition, during the Costa Rica meeting, the ICANN board, in response to a request from a number of international government organizations, or IGOs, requested to both the GAC and the GNSO Council to provide policy advice on whether to protect the IGO names at both the top and second levels of the new GTLDs. The GNSO, after deliberating about the request, had decided that its position at the time, or in response to the board request, was that it would be more appropriate for the GAC to develop advice first and provide to the board, at which time then if the board were to still ask for advice from the GNSO Council, it would do so. In addition, in its April meeting, the GNSO Council requested an initial report on special protections for all types of international organizations, including the Red Cross, the IOC, and IGOs, at both the top and second level for all new GTLDs. The current status is, as you all know, the initial application round has closed, and of course yesterday the names were revealed. The temporary moratorium on the availability of IOC or RC names at the top level, the new GTLDs, has expired, and there are currently no second-level protections for the IOC or RC names with the new GTLDs when they go designated or online next year. The GAC, in addition, has submitted a proposal last fall calling for permanent protection for both IOC and Red Cross names at both the top and second level. Last week, the GNSO Council responded with a letter to the GAC providing an update on its drafting team's work in evaluating possible options or recommendations for providing protection of the Red Cross and IOC names at the second level. In addition, a preliminary issue report in response to the request from the GNSO Council was issued last week or published last week. It is now open for public comment. The basic staff recommendation from the issue report is for the GNSO Council to consider whether or not to initiate a PDP as an approach to develop any additional policy advice in response to the outstanding board request in terms of both the IOC and Red Cross names and the IGO names. This public comment forum is ongoing, will be ongoing during Prague. We encourage your participation, not only on the report itself, but also on the issue on whether there should only be protection for international organizations that are not-for-profit and are afforded unique protections under international treaties and national laws under multiple jurisdictions, such as the IOC and Red Cross, or whether all international government organizations should be considered for possible protections. And that's a brief summary of the status of the issue related to the protection of IOC, IGO, and Red Cross names. I'd now like to turn over to our colleague, Bart Boswinkel, to talk about policy issues related to the CCNSO.
Good evening, or good day, everybody. I'll just brief you on a few topics that are hot within the CCNSO, but before doing so, I want to take you through and explain a bit about the CCNSO. Looking at the participants in the webinar, I've noted the a lot of people who are probably not familiar with the CCNSO, so I thought it might be a good idea to explain a little bit of the CCNSO, its structure, and how it organizes its work. The structure I will tell a little bit more in a few minutes, but what is good to remember and to keep in the back of your mind is, in fact, the purpose of the CCNSO. It is, of course, a SO for policy development, but the policy remit for the CCNSO is very limited, and it is clearly defined in the ICANN bylaws. What is, from a CC perspective, far more important is that it is a platform to exchange information with other CCs and with other SOs and advisory committees, and finally, it represents CCNSO members and the CCTLD community in the larger ICANN arena, ICANN community. The CCNSO is mostly organizing its activities through working and study groups, so I'll give you two examples, one from a working group and one from a study group. Looking at the structure, the CCNSO has members, and these are all CCTLD managers. To date, there are 132 members out of 256 CCTLDs. We have one application pending from Bahrain.bh, and since the Costa Rica meeting, six new members have joined the CCNSO. The second part, and this is probably the most familiar part of the CCNSO, is the CCNSO Council. Again, it has 18 councillors, three from the five ICANN regions and three appointed by the NOMCOM. It has four observers from regional CCTLD organizations. These are not linked to ICANN, but independent. And we have two liaisons, one from ALAC and one from the GNSO. The role of the CCNSO Council is more administrative, as defined in the ICANN bylaws and the rules of the CCNSO themselves. And one of the major tasks is to maintain the work plan of the CCNSO, effectively, say, organizing and ensuring that activities get done. It also has a representational role. Most notably are the joint meetings with the GAC and the GNSO, and hopefully in future with ALAC as well, and the meetings with the board. Now, going to some of the activities, one of the activities the CCNSO has organized is what is called a study group on the use of country names as TLDs. I would just briefly want to touch upon its purpose, current status, and background. And the purpose and scope of the study group is to, first of all, is to provide an overview of all current and proposed policies for allocation and delegation of country names and territory names, either as a GTLD, IDN CCTLD, and CCTLD. The second major task is to develop a typology of the names. Say examples are the IDN CCTLDs, Angleterre.Holland, or Norway in Greek, and issues arising out of, say, the different types of country names and territory names, and how they would fit in and how they would be treated under the different policies, and see if there are some issues. And if appropriate, finally, the study group will advise on a course of further action. The current status is the overview of potential policies is completed, the typology has been developed, and to date, and we hope by Prague, UNESCO will conduct a survey amongst its members, so countries, to survey to test the typology. As you see, it will be launched shortly. The study group has been working on identifying issues, and this work will continue at the Prague meeting, and hopefully it will be finished by then, and then post-Prague, when the results from the survey come in, they will start working on the recommendations. A bit on the background of this study group, the use of country and territory names has been widely debated within ICANN for quite some time, both as part of the new GTLD process and as part of the IDN PDP. It was very clear at a certain point that the IDMP is not suitable to deal with all different types of country names. For instance, Norway in English would not fit as would not be eligible as an IDN CCTLD. So therefore, the IDM PDP is not the suitable mechanism to study all the implications around and develop policy around the use of country names, and therefore the study group was established. A second topic I want to discuss with you is the current status of the IDNC policy development process. This process has been initiated quite some time ago, in parallel with the IDN fast-track process itself. But as most effort went into the fast-track process and the policy development process, want to take into consideration the experience with the IDN fast-track. It has, since 1.5 years, has picked up the pace again. And at this stage, the overall policy for the selection of IDN CCTLD is almost completed. Currently, the working group dealing with this part of the IDN PDP is dealing with the confusingly similarity issues that arise out of the implementation plan, so learning from the experience of the fast-track process, and hopefully at the Prague meeting, the working group will be able to conclude its discussions. What it's also doing is updating the process, again taking into account the experience from the fast-track processes, and there will be a placeholder regarding IDN variant management. A second part of the IDN CCPDP is on the inclusion of IDN CCTLDs in the CCNSO. Currently, and according to the bylaws, IDN CCTLDs cannot apply for membership. So as part of the overall policy, this topic needs to be addressed as well. The working group who's dealing with this topic is finalizing its recommendations, in particularly, and they still want to understand the implications of voting mechanisms for the CCNSO for the members. Another main activity of the CCNSO is, again, this is not policy related, is, for example, the Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group. The CCNSO has established a Strategic and Operational Planning Working Group in 2008, and its main focus is on providing input and feedback to ICANN on its strategic and operational planning processes. Currently, the SOP Working Group has submitted its final or its comments on ICANN's draft fiscal year 2013 operating plan and budget, and the submission is available at this URL. What you have to keep in mind when with the SOP, it is not representing the CCNSO nor individual CCTLDs, so it just speaks on its own behalf. Finally, the CCNSO agenda for the Prague meeting, some highlights. There will be a panel discussion on CCTLDs and WCIT. The title of the panel discussion will be how CCTLDs can influence the outcome of the WCIT process. This panel discussion is open, as all meetings of the CCTLDs are, and it will be on Wednesday, 27th of June. There will be an extensive IDN session, again, with an update from the working groups from the IDN PDP, updates from the variant issue project, ICANN staff variant issue project, and on universal acceptance of TLDs. Again, this is an ICANN project. And there will be two presentations from IDN CCTLD managers. And finally, there will be a security session on Tuesday as well with the DSSA and the recommendations of the SSRT will be discussed during that session. What I want to highlight as well, because there is no slide here on that, is the work of the DSSA. The DSSA has making considerable progress over the since the Costa Rica meeting, and it will present its progress report to the community at the Prague meeting, and the co-chairs of the DSSA will inform their respective SOs and ACs on the progress made, and there will be a public open workshop on Thursday morning if you're interested in contributing to the work of the DSSA. The Prague agenda of the CCNSO can be found at this URL, and the specific working group and council meeting schedule is on the CCNSO calendar. Now I want to hand over to my dear colleague Heidi Ulrich, who will inform you on the ALAC policy issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bart. Hello, everyone. This is Heidi Ulrich, and this is the first time that ALAC activities have been included in this pre-meeting policy webinar. I'm delighted to give you a brief update on the ALAC's policy and process activities in advance of the Prague meeting. First, I'd like to go ahead and talk about the policy issues being discussed within the ALAC. The ALAC produced 15 statements in response to open public comments between January and the end of May 2012. In addition, they recently approved two more statements and are either voting on or developing five more at the moment. Of the statements submitted, the ALAC would like to highlight two. The first is the ALAC statement on the ICANN Board of Conflicts of Interest Review. The ALAC welcomed the creation of a board, new GTLD program committee. However, they believe that a cross-community commission, including possibly outside corporate governance experts, be set up to examine ICANN's conflict of interest at all levels. The second statement they'd like to highlight is the ALAC statement on the WHOIS Policy Review Team Draft Report. Firstly, the ALAC extended its congratulations to the WHOIS Review Team for its exhaustive process to meet inclusion and transparency goals. The ALAC continued by recommending that WHOIS proxies be regularized and privacy registrations be accommodated as long as the proxy provider acts on the expressed actual authority of the registrant and that the proxy provider accepts strict liability for the registrant on whose behalf it acts. In addition to preparing statements, the ALAC and at-large community members continue to work with members of ICANN staff and the board on applicant support issues. A subset of the JAZZ group, both at-large and GNSO members, have been occasionally meeting with staff and select board members to work out the details of the applicant support program implementation. However, perhaps as important as the actual work they are doing, this process seems to be a good model for future collaborative efforts where complex implementation issues can involve the community and not be done solely by staff. More information on all of the ALAC statements are available on the at-large correspondence page at the address listed on the slide. Now I'd like to move on to ALAC process and program issues. The first one that I'd like to discuss is ALAC process for considering and making objections to new GTLD applications, which has now been operationalized. In ICANN's new GTLD program, the ALAC was given the responsibility to consider and possibly file objections to new GTLD applications. In March of this year, the ALAC approved a process that involves a bottom-up development of potential objections and approval of possible objections, both by the regional at-large organizations, followed by consideration and approval by the ALAC. A 15-member new GTLD review group, which was selected by the ALAC and the five RALOs, is in place. They've had two meetings to be trained on the process and will be meeting again in Prague to discuss further details now that the applications have been revealed. This activity is at the at-large community's first operational role, and the ALAC process is available on the wiki page that I put on the slide. The second program-related issue is that the ALAC at-large improvements project's final report has been submitted to the SIC for review in Prague. As a bit of background to this, in June 2009, the final report of the ALAC review working group on ALAC improvements was published. And within that report, they made 13 recommendations, which identified key areas of needed improvement of the at-large, including the at-large organization, its effectiveness, participation, and relationship to other ICANN entities. The ALAC and representatives from the at-large community have been working on the implementation of the 13 recommendations since August 2010 through both a number of globally diverse work teams and more recently the at-large improvements project task force. The final report outlines how they have either fully completed the 13 recommendations and action items developed by the work teams or given the responsibility of monitoring activities that are ongoing by their nature to other at-large groups. And this task force also has identified a set of criteria to be considered in the next ALAC review. Upon review of the final report by the SIC, which, by the way, was adopted or ratified unanimously by the ALAC recently, and then moving on from the SIC to the board, the first review of the ALAC will be completed. And the final report is available on the at-large community wiki at the URL listed on the slide. And finally, this slide shows the at-large community's current organization, including that it is composed of globally distributed at-large structures, now 144, arranged within five regional at-large organizations, or RALOs, that feed directly to the 15-member at-large advisory committee, the ALAC. Now, the ALAC in its current form will be celebrating its 10-year anniversary during the Prague meeting on Monday, the 25th of June, between 1600 and 1900. This ALAC anniversary event will include both a retrospective of the ALAC's achievements as well as its aims for the future. And you're all very warmly invited to participate in this event as well as the 20 other at-large meetings being held in Prague. This concludes the ALAC update, and I would now like to hand the floor over to my good colleague, Olaf Nordling, to present the ASO policy highlights.
Thank you very much, Heidi, and good evening to all from Brussels. We'll now spend a few minutes on numbers, which in the ICANN context translates into IP addresses and autonomous system numbers. And those are in need of policy, most certainly, as well. And that's where the Address Supporting Organization, or ASO, comes into play. The ASO is probably the least well-known of the ICANN supporting organizations, if I dare say. So background is in order. Starting with a few acronyms. Regional Internet Registries, or RIRs, which is an important part of one could call the IP address food chain. They receive big blocks from ICANN to the IANA function, and they distribute smaller blocks to the ISPs in their regions, which in turn hand over IP addresses to you so you can connect to the Internet. Pretty useful. There are five such regional Internet registries. As AFRINIC for Africa, Asia Pacific has APNIC, ARIN for North America, LACNIC for Latin America and Caribbean, and RIPE for the European region. And they all cooperate through an organization called the NRO, or the Number Resource Organization. And now we can explain what the ASO actually is. It is an organization set up through an MOU between ICANN and the NRO, and by inference also the RIRs, and this MOU appoints the task of fulfilling the ASO role to the NRO. So the ASO can be seen as an alias for the NRO, if you so wish. Well, and one of the major tasks of the ASO is to handle global policy proposals, which is a particular name, and a rather grand name at that, and it has a very particular meaning. Because the RIRs, they develop many, very many, regional addressing policies for the allocation to the ISPs, but also very few ones that do affect the IANA handling of address blocks. And only those are called global policies. Now, there is currently one global policy proposal that has been in the pipeline for quite some time and has recently been approved, addressing recovered IPv4 address space in the situation post-exhaustion. And as you probably well aware, last year the IANA free pool of IPv4 address blocks was exhausted in the beginning of last year. So recycling of this scarce resource is really the name of the game here. And it is important because the proposal enables IANA to both receive returned IPv4 address space from the RIRs and also to hand it out, allocate it in smaller address blocks than was previously possible because they were obliged to distribute blocks of 16 million addresses, so-called slash 8. And it's rather unlikely that such blocks would be allocated or returned and allocated in the future. This was took quite some time, and this is actually the third proposal on this topic. And what needs to happen is that such proposals must be first adopted by consensus in all regional internet registries, and then reviewed by the NRO Executive Committee, and then sent by the ASO Address Council to the ICANN board. And that has then happened with this particular proposal, and it was ratified by the ICANN board on the 6th of May, and it's now under implementation by the IANA to enable the receipt and reallocation of such resources. I said it took some time. This was the third proposal, and the two previous proposals didn't arrive at the full consensus needed in order to be put forward as a global policy proposal. So it's been a long time in the making, but now it's done. If you're interested in these matters, well, the very best way to get acquainted with them and to make your voice heard is to join in to the bottom-up policy development processes in any of the RIRs, because they all conduct open meetings and where policy proposals are discussed, and they have open mailing lists for such matters. So it's really an open door, and you have the opportunity of a lifetime to get acquainted with it more in detail in Prague at the ASO-AC workshop, which takes place on Wednesday, 1 to 3 p.m. local time. And with that little commercial, I would like to hand over to my colleague, Felice Yilmaz, to tell you more about participation and engagement in the wider context.
Thank you, Olof. Highlights I will cover within participation and engagement area are new meeting structure and program, outreach discussion session, public comments, the PPC consultation session, and the newcomers activities at ICANN 44. You can find the full ICANN 44 schedule now at this URL noted on the slide. It was published on 4th of June. ICANN 44 is closed by Thursday evening officially after the closing reception. This is new. Some very specific Monday sessions are scheduled to increase interactive discussions on specific topics. David mentioned some of them at the beginning. These topics and sessions are organized based on community leaders' feedback, and we will have these on Monday throughout the day. The other main change is the structure of the public forum. At ICANN 44, the session will have two major sections, board reporting and open mic session. During board reporting, ICANN board will provide a briefing on what they had heard during the week and what their plans and considerations of the next steps about them will be. During open mic part of the session, there will be time for feedback on the board reporting as well as the usual specific agenda topics. These specific topics are again crafted with input from community leaders, and I'm currently working on such a detailed agenda. I hope to have it published in a couple of days again, quite in advance, for the community review before the session takes place on 28th of June. Outreach has been a highlighted theme in the recent meetings. You may have been following that. A framework that is worked out by the ICANN staff was shared with the community at ICANN 43. Now, continuing this discussion, we will have another session. In this, the aim is to find common themes to be able to work together better with the community in a more coordinated manner. We will mainly focus on community building, increasing number of participants and level of engagement, and discuss ways of working together to better coordinate the efforts using the limited shared resources of ICANN. Well, you may remember as of 1st of January 2012, at the beginning of this year, we launched a new public comment system. This system was implemented fundamentally in accordance to the ATRT recommendations, and then collecting more specific community feedback on the implementation details. Now, after 5 or 6 months now of using the system, it is observed that maybe the recommended structure does not seem to really serve to the intended goal as such. Reply periods do not seem to be used by most groups, and the whole focus is still during the comment periods. And the minimum 21 days timing maybe is found too short by some of the groups. ICANN Board's Public Participation Committee, PPC, oversees public comment processes, and they have a consultation session with the community on Thursday, and this will be discussed there again. The other agenda point of this meeting will be on language services. Now, the newcomers' activities are again taking place in Prague. Launch will serve from Saturday to Wednesday following the opening hours of the registration desk. It is staffed with ICANN staff and fellowship alumni. So this is a very good example of ICANN staff working together with community. It's a joint effort. And this is now also turning into an ICANN information point for everyone, getting quite popular. So we try to have all sorts of fact sheets produced internally as well as those from community groups. We will also use the social media with more focus for the newcomers during ICANN 44, and newcomers will be wearing green badges as usual. If you see one, please talk to them and help welcoming them to the ICANN community. The other pillar of the newcomers program is the newcomers Sunday tracks. They are getting really popular, and we get not only the first-timers anymore, but also old-timers who would like to get a refresher as well. Newcomers Sunday tracks will start at 10:30 with a welcome session, including an introduction to ICANN, the ICANN community, and the multi-stakeholder model. Then we will continue with sessions on ICANN engagement tools, policy update, ombudsman, registries and registrars, recent developments in domain name system, and we will conclude with contractual compliance. If you know new participants to ICANN, you may want to advise them to attend these sessions and also to drop by the newcomers lounge. Well, it is not on my slides, but I would like to finally mention that we are again broadcasting the all public sessions of the meeting, allowing remote participation to the meeting. We reached a record number of remote connections in Costa Rica, and the user experience was reported to be very pleasant. We hope to keep this high quality of service in Prague, too. If you can't be in person at the meeting, please make use of these services and join us again. And thank you, and I will now hand over to David, I believe.
Thank you very much, Phyllis, and I'd like to thank my fellow colleagues from ICANN for their presentations. I will now have the phones unmuted so you can ask some questions if you have any additional questions, either by raising your hand or through the chat room. And as we're doing this, the how best to stay updated, I would recommend, if you have not, our policy update every month is a very good and concise way for learning more about the latest developments in policy development within the SOs and the ACs. It's also available in many languages, and so we encourage you to subscribe and look to that. I will, of course, now go through the other areas. The other way, of course, would be to contact us with any questions you may have on this presentation. It will be posted, and the transcription will be posted as well, and we'll be able to provide that for your review at your leisure. In the meantime, I open up for questions that people may have. Brian Larson talks about will be his first meeting in Prague, and do they have any Wi-Fi in the meeting rooms? I think Phyllis will be answering that.
I did answer that on the chat room, David, but yes, there will be Wi-Fi throughout the whole meeting area. And there's another question, if there will be a Twitter hashtag for the meeting. Yes, there will be one. We provide ICANN424 as the hashtag. If you follow ICANN account, everything will go from there. There will be also a hashtag for the newcomers.
So already, Brian, you're less of a newcomer, but thank you for those questions. If there are not any more questions, I will want to again thank all the participants for listening in, being part of this webinar as we prepare for the ICANN meeting in Prague. We hope to see you there either in person or remotely. And with that, I'd like to wish everyone a good evening, good afternoon, or good morning from the policy team and from ICANN. Thank you very much for your involvement here.
Thank you.